Welcome to the Shabbat show. I thought Craig was going to be doing the show, but apparently he's out. I really didn't think I was going to be on at all because my wife, Yalda, was having a party, and she ended up changing the party to another home so I could do the radio show. But I had a hard time getting into the chat room. I was not aware that Yada wasn't on, so we're here and we're on and we'll get started. JB, are you by chance, are you able to hear me at all? I'm not sure if anybody's hearing me or not. Could somebody in the chat room let me know? Okay. Well, hopefully I am on, and I'll go ahead and start working on it here. Okay, somebody told me that they're hearing me. I really had no idea, and this has just kind of caught me off guard. You know, what I'd like to get into tonight, rather than, you know, go through the breakdowns. Is that you, JB?
Yeah, I'm on now.
Okay, I wasn't sure what was going on, you know, at all. I couldn't get in the chat room. It kept kicking me out, telling me that app wasn't supported, something it's never done before. And I was busy doing that, and I wasn't aware that we were past 7:30 and that Yada wasn't there. So anyway, I went ahead and just pinned in, you know, and got the show started. What I'd like to talk about, and this is something that, you know, people almost uniformly have been taught that is wrong, and that's that religious writings are uniformly designed to mislead. And, you know, I mean, this is just a little small passage here from Yashayahu 1:19. And it says this, if you are willing and you listen, the goodness of the land you shall find nourishing. That's a pretty simple statement. But yet, you know, if you go to the King James Version or the NASB or the NLT, you know, in that very short passage that started out saying, you know, if you will listen, if you will voluntarily accept the invitation, that's certainly not a command. They write Shama as either obedient or will obey or consent. And yet, you know, Yahweh is sharing with us the way to walk with him. And the way to reason together with him, and to be a, you know, a part of a family, a relaxed family environment. We went through a lot of problems here in the last couple of weeks because we have people that are just convinced that, you know, Yahweh lays out religious edicts, and that's the last thing that he is. So when we're sitting there looking at his words, I think it's kind of incumbent upon us to try to see things from his perspective. Yahusha railed about the religious scribes and the religious leaders and how they had basically taken a family covenant and turned it into a religion. Isn't that what he did, JB?
Yeah. Yeah, he's never has a kind word to say about the religious types.
Right, and he was particularly hard on the people that were rewriting his words, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
the scribes.
You know, I mean, you know, you talk about, we'll be out there talking to people and sharing the words, and you'll get somebody say, well, the way the Jews did it back then was like this, or the way the Jews did it was like this. Well, the answer to that, if that's the way the Jews did it, well, then I certainly know I don't want to do it that way. You know,
yeah. during a very, very brief period of their history. You know, there was a very brief period where they actually followed Yah's word. But other than that, they're most famous for ignoring it.
Yeah. Uniformly, people are talking about what the traditions were. And I do believe Yahusha told them it was the traditions of your fathers that, have laid my words to no effect at all. I mean, he did tell them that. And it was a religious tradition that was basically the main ingredient and what the scribes wrote. It's the same combination we see today. It's a caustic brew of traditions and religious writers that destroy, the real straightforward approach Yahweh has to making an offer that can be accepted out of free will. It seems to all be stolen through words like obey and obedient and I command. And it just gets old. I've been at this a number of years now. I know you have too. And, you're talking to people and they'll say, he commands us to do this. It's like they're really looking forward to being a part of a kind of a master-slave type of relationship.
Isn't that right? Military type.
I think it's even worse than that. It's one thing when you get an order from some chief or team leader or something like that. But, we're talking about God here. can you imagine, if you looked at his words as though they were, just flat out commandments to be obeyed? I mean, at some point it gets really old. And one of the things I want to go over, and this is something I know we've gone over probably 100 times, but Torah does not mean law.
No.
Not in any twisted definition
of it.
Right. If you're leaving me with a set of instructions and you're asking me to seriously consider and ponder them, and especially if you leave me a set of instructions.
Of your own free will to accept them.
Yeah. And you're leaving me a set of instructions that cannot be specifically done today. Then what is it you're telling me? You're asking me to look at what went on and consider why. Isn't that what you're doing? I mean, that has to be what you're doing. Yeah, because I can't do them. And let's just break it down again here. Torah. And we're going to look at all the base words in here. And Toh, the signed, written, and enduring tour, and that's TWR, giving us the means to explore, to seek, to find, to choose. Then, of course, Yara, the source of which instruction, teaching, guidance, and direction flow. Tub provides answers which facilitate our restoration and return, even our response and reply, which is Tob, which is today, I think, Tov, but it's Tob. Good, pleasing, joyful, beneficial, healing, that which is right, that which causes us to be loved, to be accepted. And then Taur, which is THWR, purifying and cleansing. And then Tor, TWR, so as to provide opportunity to change our thinking and our direction and our very attitudes. Sort of like looking at things from his perspective. So the definition of Torah is not law. None of that said something ingrained in stone that you are punished for if you fail to do. I didn't read that in there anywhere. Did you? I mean, I just don't see it. But tradition and the way people have always accepted what the religious writers, and I'm with Yada on this. I don't really think they're copy editors as much as they are creative writers. They just write whatever they want to write. and they don't really take into consideration what was put down or what the base words mean. That's the thing about, you know, looking at Paleo-Hebrew or Hebrew and amplifications. What happens in most cases is that people go back to the nearest meaning of the word. You know, forgetting this was written 3,000 years ago, right? And so what they don't do is they don't go back to the original meaning of the word. Well, what he was writing down was what the word meant at that time. Am I correct?
Yeah, the words changed over time, but yeah, we can look in historically and understand what the words meant to the people of that time.
Right. And so we look at Torah, and what we see is written instructions that provide teaching, direction, and guidance. That's what we see. But uniformly, you'll see the religious writers write the law. Do they not? I mean, they write the law.
Oh, almost 100% of the time.
Yeah, yeah. All of them I've seen, the law. And it's a law that you obey, basically under penalty of death. You know, if you think about it, if you draw it out to its logical conclusion, that's what they're saying. When none of these things are true, you know, we spent weeks here talking about Dode and how Dode had a number of wives. He had a number of, socially bad habits, if you will. He kind of rode the edge there and lived pretty large and pretty much did what he wanted to do. And many times was outside the bounds of any law. But what was so beautiful about Dode was his understanding of the Torah. He got it. You know, he really got this is about understanding. And he was able to grasp the offer. And at the same time, he was able to respond appropriately to the offer. And that's what it is we're looking at, isn't it?
You know, how many laws are there that you know of that you can break time and time again and not only not suffer any consequence or be punished, at least, you're suffering consequence of your actions, but not be punished mm-hmm. for, but not only not be punished, actually be called righteous. That doesn't sound like any law I have ever heard of.
Or even the most righteous. You know,
yeah.
it kind of goes beyond being called right. He's like the most righteous. And that was because he understood that Yahweh was trying to communicate, or at least this is my take, Yahweh was trying to communicate who he is and what he's about and what his offer is and how he really does want to have an honest relationship with people. And these were the very things that the scribes, you know, we already know 2,000 years ago, they had trashed it. That's 2,000 years ago. They had already trashed it.
It's gotten better since then.
No, it's only gotten worse. I mean, look, when I sit down, you know, I've got a number of Jewish friends. And when I sit down with my Jewish friends, that, now I'm not talking about the Jewish people in the family here, but I'm talking about, you know, my other Jewish friends have basically been raised with the Talmud and with the traditions and all that, they're continually just going through ritual stuff. It's pretty thoughtless. They leave it up to the rabbi to tell them what to do. Just like, you know a lot of Christians and they go to church and then the guy tells them what to do. But nobody really thinks about it. And that's the problem we have trying to get people to, you know, put on their thinking cap a little bit. You know, nothing brought this to a head, to a boiling point any faster than talking about Yahweh's directions on health instructions, on eating. Now, I'm going to tell you guys right now, I smoke. Yeah, do you think if cigarettes had been around back then, do you think Yahweh would have said, hey, don't smoke? I do. I think he probably would have said, don't smoke. You know, that would have been right in there. But you know what? He can have a relationship with people that smoke. One thing I can guarantee you, nobody's more righteous because their lips never touched a piece of pork. And, you know, I was talking, Lisa Turner brought up the fact, I was talking with her, or she was on a post last night, I think, that the only food these people ever want to talk about is pork. You know, they don't really talk about shrimp or lobster tail or any number of other foods. Why do you think
that is? Those are the ones that I actually have a harder time not eating. I can give up pork. I don't eat a whole lot of that. I love my shrimp, though.
Yeah, see, you know, and you get nobody really talking about that. You know, they all want to talk about just pork. Well, you know, you could get hepatitis eating a shellfish. You could. I know a guy it happened to. You can definitely get that. But having said that, okay, you know, I think, and this is just my opinion, but this verse I'm going to share out of Bereshith kind of breaks down Yahweh's perspectives. You know, when I see words like fear and obey and command and worship, that's one I really hate, worship, an antenna goes up right away. I mean, I realize we have a problem here. Because Yahweh is not a religious deity. You know, he is a creator. He wants to be around people that seriously have considered. I mean, think of the stupidity of a person who never considered where they came from, where all this came from. I mean, at some time, there has to be a wonderment. You know, you really have to almost be amazed at what all we have out here. And don't you ask yourself at some point, where does this stuff come from? I was raised by atheists, and I did. I think most thoughtful people would. And I think that's why Yahweh uses the style that he uses, which is a style, you know, based on people who are a little intuitive and people who do some investigative work and people that honestly think.
Yeah, I was going to say, people who are thoughtful. That's where Yahweh's interested in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean they have to think. They have to be thoughtful. They have to genuinely probe things a little bit. They have to consider things in their mind. They have to be rational.
Hopefully they don't have to be punctual.
Yeah, well,
we were all late tonight, so.
Oh, goodness. I think all of you know that I have been involved in trying to prepare a house for sale and the West Coast so that we can live in one place, not in two. And we had the movers here today.
I live with your wife.
Yeah, that is true. And for the last 10 days, I've worked 17 hours a day preparing for this move. The movers were here today, and they couldn't figure out how to get it on their truck and trailer. And so I was manual labor with them. And I had my landscapers here, but they just all left 5 minutes ago, and I ran down here as fast as I could. But that was my reality, I had a cast of about 12 people here today, and they... They all needed more supervision than you would have thought. anyway, I apologize. Larry, I was listening to what you were talking about there at the end, but as I think about it, and you realize who is the fellow that Yahweh routinely says that he wants to model his kingdom on earth after, and that he obviously loved more than anyone else that has been born among men.
That was Dode. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, was Dode a really religious, ritualistic, play it by the book? I mean, was he the kind of guy that did you would leave your wife with if she was really pretty while you went on a
probably not. I would trust my wife enough.
No, in fact, I'm not even sure I trust my daughter with him. So, you know, he was, you know, he had kind of a rascally streak to him. But there's really only two things that differentiate Dode from the rest of us. You know, and I relate to Dode because I have a rascally nature. You know, I've done lots of things that were kind of rascally, and I really have a tough time with authority. Dode had a horrible time with authority. He just hated authority. He chafed at it in every possible way, and I hate authority. So, you know, I have a lot in common with him. But Dode had two things going for him. That is only two things that could possibly cause Yahweh to think highly of him. One is Yahweh was his priority. He thought about it. He obviously studied and observed and thought about and analyzed the Torah up one side and down the other. I think he and Moshe would be the foremost experts on the Torah amongst all humankind. And then he not only did that, but he had what you know is that he was interested in the things that interest Yahweh. He was interested in knowing Yahweh. He was interested in spending time with Yahweh. He was interested in what was important to Yahweh. He wanted to know everything there was to know about Yahweh. That was his priority. That was his focus. That was his attitude. So that's – now, he didn't, you know, just wallow in it. Oh, God, you're just so lovely. I just praise you day and night. You know, I'm going to put up my hands and wave them in the air, and I praise your holy name. Yeah, that wasn't how he
yeah, he didn't do the Hallmark moments. Yeah.
No. His idea was, I'm going to study what Yahweh said, and then I'm going to share what I think it means. He was the a inspired and brilliant version of the feeble attempt I've made at Yada Yah. You know, Yada Yah is me reading what Yahweh said, and me saying, you know, this is how it applies. This is what I think it means. Here's how it's connected. Here's what we can learn from it. You know, and I don't want to compare them and say they're on the same level, because obviously I'm not writing prophecy. I'm not inspired. But the thought, the same process is somewhat involved in Yada Yah is, here's what God said. Here's what the words mean. Here's what it means to us. Here's how we can apply it. Here's how we can learn from it. This is how it can expand our understanding of who God is and what he wants and how we can capitalize on it. That was his focus. And the second thing that makes Dode unique is, man, that dude was smart. I mean, he was really smart. Smartest man who ever lived.
Understatement.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, Einstein.
He was pretty fearless, too.
He was pretty fearless. I think Yahweh likes people with the backbone. And, you know, personally, here's my take on courage and being fearless with Yahweh, is that, you know, I'm willing to confront Islam on behalf of Yahweh. But I can't say I do it because I have courage, and I can't say I do it because I'm fearless. I do it because I've got the universe's most formidable protection services. And I have the world's greatest life assurance policy. So really, what am I risking? What was Dode really risking? What are any of us risking? Now, yes, are we going to be slandered and humiliated and threatened, but what are we really risking? I mean, I don't see myself as courageous, and while I see Dode as having a backbone and not taking any crap from anyone under any circumstances and always willing to stand up, when you really know Yahweh, when you're part of his family, I'm not so sure that's real courage. I think it's just a full appreciation of who he is and what we mean to him. You know, he doesn't watch out for and take care of all the little children, but he sure as hell takes care of his children.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I think makes Dode unique. And when you realize that Dode is by far Yahweh's favorite, and that he had a rascally personality, and he violated the Torah's instructions every which way, but he understood it, it provides the ideal scenario for us to emulate, for us to follow, for us to learn from, for us to recognize. So now you have to say, okay, you've made the conclusion, and rightly so, that God, Yahweh, is looking for people who like to learn, who think discovery is fun, who appreciate being enlightened, who find a thrill in discovery. Okay? That is a given. Why? Why is God interested in that as opposed to somebody, you know, we've all been around people who are super giving. Dode wasn't charitable.
Well, then,
he wasn't sharing his harem. He wasn't charitable. You know, so
because
God's not obviously not as
they
right?
have considered and been rational and said, we didn't pop out of thin air. I want to get to the root of things. I want to get
right.
to the bottom, you know, the bottom line. Bottom line is there's one straight game in town.
Yeah.
And you know, had it just been go be religious, well, you could go be religious in any number of religions.
Yeah, I think the thing about Dode is that, and of Yahweh, is that his favorite people aren't giving. We don't see any sacrifice or any giving on part of Noah. We don't see any giving or sacrifice on part of Adam. We certainly don't see any generosity on behalf of Abraham. We don't see generosity on behalf of Dode. We don't see a giving, charitable nature as something that appeals to Yahweh and those he chooses to be close to. We certainly
don't. No, they're productive people. They're all productive people. That's why he doesn't, you know,
right.
Engage theologians, as an example.
Right.
You know,
right.
They're the last
and
people to ask
right.
about.
And they're also, if you look at it, you don't find, there is not a single person with whom Yahweh has chosen to have an examined relationship where he's made the relationship visible for us who's lovey-dovey. You know, you don't have anybody writing in lovey-dovey terms. You know, gushy emotion. No gushy emotion here.
No, you don't see a lot of them. You see a lot of anger in some of them. A lot of
yes, you do.
Righteous indignation.
Righteous
but you don't
indignation.
See a lot of, like you said, emotionally driven lovey-doveyness.
No, you see righteous indignation. You see almost no expression of lovey-dovey. So the two things that the Christian would say makes you more like their God, makes you ideal, being super loving and being super giving, you don't find a single life explored in Yahweh's testimony that is either of those two things.
I've got to get the soup over to my poor neighbor. I've got to do this.
No. You don't find any of that.
Yeah,
you don't find any of it. And you don't find any of the anybody that is being explored that has a relationship with Yahweh that's other than straightforward. Just
and you don't
man,
see a lot of them out there praying for other people. They don't do that.
No. And they're never instructed to. All right, so here's my thought on this, because I think that this conversation tells us a lot about who Yahweh is and what he wants. It's something I've thought a lot about, and I'm not claiming to be right here. I'm just sharing insights that I think are helpful for all of us. Even if you reject it, I just want you to think about it. You said that Yahweh is the only straight game in town. But it's more than that. Can you imagine being God and coming up with the three-dimensional writing system that is DNA and how you can manipulate this writing system and create everything from an aardvark to a platypus? And that you can conceive any form of life by manipulating this particular system. And having this system be powered by extraordinarily complex proteins and amino acids, and even that is a construct of molecules. And those molecules are a construct of atoms. And those atoms are a construct of neutrons, protons, and electrons. And those things themselves are composed of things like quarks and leptons, and it gets infinitely more complex, these building blocks. Can you imagine doing all of that and having no one to share it with?
It would suck.
Dick, I mean, yep. Like you wrote the most beautiful poem, the most beautiful song, the most beautiful thing. You built the most beautiful. Can you imagine building the Taj Mahal? I don't think it's all that beautiful, but let's say that for practical purpose, you built the most beautiful home, and it's just you.
That'd be a little boring.
It's boring, man. You got no one to share it with, and. And the universe that God created and life within it is such a magnificent construct. I mean, even the construct of energy and its interrelationship to matter and time and having a seven-dimensional universe that – and you've conceived all of this in these great galaxies and clusters of galaxies and other planets orbiting in other solar systems. God, wouldn't you want to share it? I mean, wouldn't it be like the guy that built the most beautiful plantation, home, you know, gardens and residence in the world, and it was all by himself? Wouldn't it be the same thing? In fact, worse?
Yeah, what would you? It'd be a pretty empty feeling. It'd be empty.
Okay.
It'd just be an empty existence.
Since we can project that, on Yahweh, because sharing it with the Malak is not worth the time of day. They're command and obey. That's like, you know, being a general and telling the sergeant about your favorite artist. I mean, a stupid, you know, private's going to sit there, yes, sir, you know.
Don't you just love Beethoven? Beethoven? Who?
Yeah, right. So, forget,
I love Beethoven. That guy was great.
So here you're Yahweh, and you've created this, and you want to share it. And you think that sharing it is the ultimate way of enjoying relationships and of growing and of having fun together. And so your idea of having fun is sharing, exploring what you've created, you know, enjoying this magnificent home. So wouldn't you want to spend eternity with people who not only are good at that, people who not only do that, but people who enjoy it, who are excited
about it?
Yeah,
people who at least had an interest. You know,
right.
I mean,
would you want to share your universe with somebody that says, "Oh, you know that Torah thing that you wrote for guidance? I think it's for shit. I think it's pornography. I think it's mean spirited." Would you want to
you
spend eternity?
Like Paul?
We're starting to get together now.
Yeah, Christians. Would you want to do that?
Well, or I wouldn't even want to share it with somebody that said, "Oh, you're going to let me into this beautiful house that you built with these phenomenal architectural designs that makes Frank Lloyd Wright look like a lightweight with all this special effects and everything." Because thanks for letting me come in. Because you know, after all, I want to be saved.
I want to bring in my false gods with me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be putting a little shrine here to worship my false gods.
Yeah.
You won't mind. I mean, I'm going to bring in my Jesus and my Allah.
Yeah.
My Krishna.
Yeah.
And my Buddha.
You're
going
to walk into your house, like a boob, walk down, and take a dump right on your living room floor.
That's
you're
exactly
okay with that,
what
right,
it
right,
would be. Yeah. So I think that, you know, Kirk and I think we've had a really good time. I hope it's been fun for Kirk. I have been going through Yahweh Kanan 3 up to the John 3:16 and then a little beyond that. And, man, it's I felt that we were exploring the universe, the most important aspect of the universe, who Yahweh is, what he's offering, how we capitalize on it, how we get to know him, how everything works, why the Moed Mikre have us come into the presence of our spiritual mother, the female manifestation of Yahweh's light, how all of this works, how you have to be part of the covenant before you're saved. In Yahochanan 3, he walked us through the whole thing from start to finish. You know, how there's no physical bodies in heaven, how, you know, unless you're born of spirit, you're going to fade away and rot just like, you know, your physical body. What a, you know, it was so exciting to review this material and listen to the mind of God guide us through his Torah, his teaching. I'm happy to do that for all time.
Sounds like my idea of paradise.
Yeah.
My, you know, there's going to be so many things we're going to be doing. The Torah will be part of us. You'll know how to do all that.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody actually makes the Torah a part of you, you'll actually be able to create a universe, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think that...
He tells
you
how he did it. It's in there, you know.
Yeah, I think we want to be careful, too, in that all that we can learn from the Torah will be part of the Torah that's in us. But there is huge parts of the Torah that would actually be counterproductive and that will not be included. When Yahweh writes his Torah in us, he's writing his teaching in us, his guidance in us, not the existing book.
I think that will be, sure.
Yeah, it's course, important yeah. for you to know that he's not going to give you instructions, for example, on what to eat because you're a spiritual being. You don't have to eat. He's not going to give you instructions on you ought not have sex with a goat because you're a spiritual being, man. You don't have the don't have a ding-a-ling. You're not going to need so much of the instruction. You're not going to need instruction on don't kindle a fire on the Shabbat. It's there are. You're not going to need instructions as to Yahweh's tabernacle. You don't need instructions on how to build it. You don't need instructions on what to do in it. You're not going to need a lowly priest. Our instructions of what they're supposed to do. I mean, they're all the genealogies and Devarim, Bamidbar, numbers useless. And what Yah was going to explain regarding creation, because we get to witness a new creation, is going to be a billion, billion, billion times more detailed and exciting than the one chapter he provided in the existing Torah. The existing Torah is there to teach us who Yahweh is and to guide us how to engage in a relationship with him. Full stop. We will already know Yahweh up close and personal, and we will already be part of his eternal family. And so the only guidance, the only Torah that he's going to write in us is guidance as to how to maximize the enjoyment and the productivity of eternity as a spiritual being in his universe.
Which that in and of itself is pretty amazing. I mean.
Oh, really? Yeah. And think about how important that is. Let's just say that Larry and James, the three of us, want to go take a sojourn, and we want to go to a galaxy far, far away. And we just really want to, we heard that there's a galaxy out there with a planet where there are dinosaurs. And we want to go camp out for a week among the dinosaurs. But, you know, we want to make certain that when we get there and camp out and we make this transition from a spiritual being to a physical being so we can actually smell and touch and talk and, you know, and just enjoy the breeze and the warmth of that, whatever that sun is for that particular planet. That we want to make certain that we go to a physical being that we don't do something stupid like get squished by the dinosaur or eaten by the dinosaur. So, you know, I'm going to be quite appreciative of having some guidance.
Yeah. I don't think we ever need, you know, cease to need guidance.
Yeah. And, you know, Dad's the architect. Dad's the designer I suspect he can provide all the guidance we're going to need, and that's what we need, is we need a comprehensive information dump, an owner's manual, as to how to get the most out of this. Because, you know, I don't.
And yet, all these things you're talking about, everything, really gets down to what the Torah is about, which is guiding you on how to engage in a relationship with Yahweh. And one of the hardest things to get people around, just get their mind wrapped around, is that this is not a religious deity you're dealing with.
Right.
You know,
this is straight up.
You're dealing with an individual, somebody who wants to be greeted as an individual. I was in a post today with some people over in South Africa, and this guy jumped in and, "Oh, you're throwing around as the Hebrew." Well, you know, Fred,
that's all that's true. That is true. That's all we're throwing around is the Hebrew.
Yeah, well, yeah, I said that, you know, that was originally
100% of Yahweh's revelation was in Hebrew. So, yeah, that's right. We're throwing around the Hebrew.
Yeah, yeah. And he says, and you're not a, I don't know, authorized cleric or whatever the hell he was looking for. And I said, just show me what word's wrong here.
Yeah.
Just show me. Show me. Well, he couldn't do that. Well, I'm going to leave now.
Okay,
you know,
go
well,
ahead.
Okay.
Go away.
Yeah, well, exactly. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
And he kept saying that he didn't have a name prior to creation. What makes you think he's not a human? He doesn't need a name. Well, I threw up his words. Oh, you know.
Right. I have one and only name that I want to be recalled by and remembered
forever,
by.
For all generations.
For all generations, for all time, I have but one name. It is Yahweh. So you can have your opinion.
Well, you can say him the deity. The deity. The deity.
So, yeah, you can apply whatever opinions you want, but, you know, the fact is that Yahweh introduced who he is in his Torah, told us who he is, what he wants, what he's offering, what he expects, what he's willing to give, and anything that you apply to him that is not consistent with what he shared is rubbish. Absolute rubbish. Yeah.
Well, he
started jumping
through hoops. He sounded like Chawa in the garden, this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he was literally carrying.
Oh, I know. You know, well, one of the things that is so interesting, of course, of Hebrew and Yahweh is that Hebrew is the only language where the verbs aren't stuck in time. Hebrew is the only language that has stems and moods that establish a relationship between the subject and object and express that relationship in either first, second, or third person volition. And how could you have a more perfect language? And even the conjugations of being ongoing, habitual, and totally perfected, done, completed, give so much refinement to concepts, ongoing behavior versus there'll be a period of time where this can happen, that are so powerful. But once you, for my taste, once you come to appreciate these unique aspects of Hebrew and how they were perfectly designed to convey Yahweh's nature so that he literally is manifest in his words, I'm not sure there's many things that are as exciting, as revealing, as enlightening, as affirming, as just satisfying as that. So, yeah, we'll throw around the Hebrew.
Yeah, and it is. It's all about relationship. You just said it. Moods, conjugations, everything's relational. Everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
The entire thing.
Yeah, when Yahweh said, my name is Yahweh for all time, do you think that he meant all time going forward? Or all time, does
all
time
include
the time going backwards?
In the future.
Yeah.
He doesn't live in the constructs of time, so that's my name.
Yeah, he doesn't live in the ordinary flow of time, which means that he exists throughout time and all time simultaneously.
He created
time. As we will. You know, one of the things that's interesting, we talk about Yahweh, and, you know, I've got the 119th Psalm open to where we left off, and I can go to it at any time. I just happen to enjoy musing about what pleases Yahweh. Well, why did he choose Dode? Why did he choose us? why are we the lucky ones who are engaged in a relationship with him? Because, you know, the Yahweh Canon 3 clearly says that Yahweh chooses. You know, we have free will. He has free will, too. We can choose to have a relationship with him, but he can choose to have a relationship with us, too. And I can tell you that I would never have come to know him had he not reached out to me before I knew him. If he didn't do that to Abraham, Abraham wouldn't have known him. If he didn't do it to Moshe, Moshe wouldn't have known him. I suspect he does it to a lot of us. And I know I'm one of them.
I think that's why you can't, that's one of the reasons you can't grab people and drag them into the covenant
right.
relationship, kicking
right.
and screaming.
Right.
He really hasn't engaged them and doesn't want
right.
to.
Yeah, if Yahweh hasn't engaged you, then it ain't going to happen. Now, could it happen if Yahweh doesn't engage with the Ives? Yes, it can. He's got the testimony. It's all there. But I just think it's uncommon. I know in my case, we engaged before I knew him. Now, here's something I want to throw out that's really controversial, and it's one of my favorite things to muse about, too. And again, when I'm musing about these things, I'm not telling you that I'm right. I'm not trying to sell this as doctrine. You're fully fine to disagree. I have come to see our eternity such that when Yahweh empowers us as his children and we are free from these mortal physical bodies, that the difference between Yahweh and ourselves will be actually quite small. Right now, God is so infinitely greater than I am, it's sometimes hard just to have a relationship buddy-buddy, father-son, because there's such a chasm of difference between us. I think that the whole reason that he's empowering us is he wants there to be very little difference, and the less difference there is between us, the more enjoyable the relationship will be for both of us.
Yeah, I think that goes
makes
without
sense.
Saying. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's very much in time, you know, in line with how we have a relationship with our parents. You know, as a kid,
we got a long
you know,
way to go.
Side by side, you know, you have a very
yeah.
lateral relationship. But
yeah.
as you get older, you can become more similar to your parents or your father.
Right.
You know, you have a more horizontal relationship.
That's correct. Absolutely. Sense. Absolutely. And I would go so far as to say this, that Yahusha, as a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, he was more, in fact, substantially, overwhelmingly more dissimilar in terms of overall power to Yahweh than what we will be.
Oh, definitely.
Well,
we are going to be empowered
body,
way
to,
beyond what Yahusha was empowered.
Sure, that would have to be the case. It would have to be.
Yeah, because
Yahusha
is hugely diminished of Yahweh, and we're going to be hugely empowered by Yahweh.
We'll
so,
be more
yeah.
akin to how Yahusha was after Bikurim.
Yeah.
But even then, it's still a diminished state, you know, when you think about it.
Less diminished, but yeah, still diminished. I think, JB, your point is valid. More like that.
Well, when you're a being of pure energy, let's say you become a being of light. That's what he's saying. Okay. You're way infinitely ahead of anything that we can even imagine, right?
Multiply by the speed of light times the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second times 186,000 miles a second. That's the quantum difference between where we are and where we're going. But you see,
that's a huge difference, you know.
That's only part of it.
Materialize down there in the dinosaur park.
See,
okay.
That's only part of it because.
Yeah.
What that does is it resolves our problem of being stuck in time. It makes
yep.
us, and it resolves some of our power issues. But you know that the difference between a 3 and a 4, well, let's just do something we can understand easier. The difference between 1 and 2 dimensions is infinite, a point versus a line. All right? The difference between 2 and 3 dimensions, which is now, is infinite again. It's infinitely larger. So you're infinite times infinite. To go from 1 to 2 is infinite. 2 to 3 is infinite times infinite. And now to go to be unlimited in time is multiplied by infinity again. And then that only gets us to 4 dimensions, and there's 7. So the empowerment is just mind-boggling.
I don't think we're capable of comprehending that.
No, 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 I'm not. I can tell you I'm not. And the only thing I can tell you is that on this program, several years ago, when we were recognizing why we were trying to understand why Yahweh couldn't do what we want, which is to put his Torah inside of us now, which is that he eliminates free will if he does it. And he eliminates the joy of the discovery that we're part of now if he were to do it. And so we understand why he can't do that now. And we also came to understand that he can't put the existing Torah in us for eternity. He can't do it. He literally can't do it because there's so much in the existing Torah that's sad. And there's no sadness in eternity. You know, the Torah doesn't just say, here's the things, here's who I am, and here's what I'm offering, and here's what we're going to do together. It has lots of instructions of, this is bad. Don't do that. This is harmful. This is disappointing. And that can't be inside of us for all eternity. So it became obvious that Yahweh was going to provide teaching for us that was pertinent to our enhanced power and time. And so the reason it was such a thrill for me is I expect eternity to still include volition, free will. I expect eternity to carry forward our existing personalities, which means that some of us are still going to be a little rascally. And
yeah.
So,
yeah, that's going to be the case. That's for sure.
Yeah, and some of us aren't really good with authority. And so I think, you know,
yeah, I was not into authority.
Right, if you
so
give me a bunch of rules, I mean, I'm not good with rules. I have never been good with rules. And so I was really looking forward to some guidance as to how I could enjoy free will and enjoy exploring an eternity without screwing something up. You know, I didn't want it to wear the dunce hat and be put in the corner. But I wanted to be adventurous. I wanted to push the threshold. I wanted to constantly going beyond the ordinary.
You know, William's got a good question in the chat room. I don't know if you saw that or not. But
no, go ahead.
He said, what do you think happened to, you know, Henoch and Eliyahu? Where do you think they are?
Yeah, that's a I think that both of them are in heaven. I think they're in the spiritual realm. I think both of them are. The only thing that we don't that we know is those two individuals did not experience physical death. That's the only thing.
But they will. Yet
they will. Those two individuals have not, and yet they will. But their souls, I'm quite confident right now, are in heaven. And I think that the very realization that they've spent these thousands of years with Yahweh, and they've experienced eternity with Yahweh, and they know Yahweh up close and personal, and they are now going to be spiritual beings in a physical body, so they're going to be just like Yosha in that regard. That you talk about two dudes that aren't going to take any shit from anybody.
Well, yeah.
They'll
laugh at it. They're laughing at the world when they come.
Well, you know, but beyond that, they and Christians don't seem to get it. These are Yahweh's direct representatives on Earth, and And there's so many, William, this is such a great question because there's so much that is revealed in these guys. One is that they don't take any shit from anybody. Number two, they are there to leave the world without excuse. They're there telling everybody in the language that they speak directly so that they can hear. If they want to know Yahweh, if they want to be part of the covenant, if they want to make the right choice, they're telling them exactly what they need to know to do that. And
right.
Number three, if anybody comes up to them and is acting like a political, military, religious, judicial boob,
they're going to be put in their place, yeah.
They're not just put in their place. They're incinerated.
Yeah, well, that's put in their place, isn't it?
They are. They just are evaporated. He is not loving all the little children. Yahweh straight up saying, you know, I got no time for you. And
Yahweh dealing with serial killers. That's what he's
saying.
Yeah,
I got no time
liars.
For you. Go, you know, poof, zap. Good
now,
mile,
I got,
go
I got
away.
A good
good
question. I got a good question for you here.
Oh, yeah.
Those are some good insights.
Okay, by the way, one other thing I wanted to share in terms of insights into Yahweh. Are these guys presented as handsome, beautifully attired, hard?
No, they're like in sackcloth. You know
okay.
I mean?
Yeah. Are these guys living in the biggest mansions? They have fancy titles, fancy positions, fancy digs.
Nope.
No. Nope. Unpretentious. There to communicate Yahweh's testimony clearly in the languages that people speak. No compromise, no nonsense. Here it is. God wants you to know so that you make an informed decision. And by the way, if
now,
you're going
you
to
know,
be an enemy of this message, I'm just going to kill you.
Right. Now, we had talked about Lot, you know, being a precursor, you know, or foreshadowing of Teruah.
Right.
You know, and we know, you know, the foreshadowing of Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavuot.
Yeah.
What was the foreshadowing of Kippurim? I don't.
Reconciling his relationship with Yisrael. Yeah, because you certainly have. You have a foreshadow of Passover, not once but twice. Abraham and Yishak is the first, and then leaving Mitzrayim is the second, and then the main event is Yosha in year 4000 Yah on Mount Moriah. So you have two foreshadows there. And then on Matzah, you have the foreshadow as leaving Egypt, and then the actual event with Yosha. One foreshadowing there. And then with Bikurim, where the children of Yisrael are now with their dad, protected as they and nurtured and clothed and fed and everything by dad as they go through the wilderness, is the foreshadow of Bikurim, and then perfected with Yosha. And then on Shavuot is when the Torah was revealed. And so there's a foreshadow there with what happened in Jerusalem when they were empowered to convey the Torah's message in any language to anyone in the world. And then Teruah is a foreshadow, I think, with Noah as well as with Lot. So then we get to, and I even think that Teruah, a bit of Teruah is a foreshadow with Hanak and Eliah.
Well, yeah, I think that's the perfect situation, you know.
Yeah,
yeah sure.
Yeah. So then we know that Sukkah had a foreshadow because Yosha arrived on Sukkah.
Yeah, he
so
Sukkah
the foreshadow,
with his cord to Yahweh.
Yeah, the foreshadow, yeah. And 2,000 years later, we'll have the fulfillment of it. So reconciliation, is there a foreshadowing of reconciliation? I don't
yes.
know, and I don't even know if there can be.
Well,
because if there is a, if there really is a foreshadow of reconciliation, then the relationship's reconciled.
Right. Well, there, I'm just saying, I've never seen it. I'm not. Maybe, you know.
Does anybody here aware of a foreshadow of reconciliations? It's talked about in the Book of Hosea.
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's certainly talked about. The timing of it is talked about in the Book of Hosea.
Mm-hmm.
And Hosea, you know, is that the Hosea, the book Hosea, Yahweh is talking about divorcing his children, but then remarrying them, you know, divorcing Yisrael, remarrying Yisrael.
Yeah, but we know that occurs on the arrival. So
yeah,
you know, that's in our future.
Yeah, there's a little bit of it, and the story of the prodigal son is sort of a precursor to what reconciliation is going to be like is found in the story of the prodigal son. You know, I'm going to give you a one that I think is kind of interesting. And I could be wrong here because the focus of this was Pesach, Matzah, and Makorim. But there was a experience of Pesach, Matzah, and Makorim that reconciled Yisrael back into a relationship with Yahweh for a number of years when their relationship was totally and completely strained and they were about to be obliterated. Anybody know that
story?
Are
you talking about the
Hezekiah?
One in Pesach?
Hezekiah. I'm talking about Hezekiah.
Late.
Where Hezekiah stumbled on a copy of the Torah and said, "Holy shit," is what he said. I have it directly from him. He said, "Holy shit, are we ever in trouble?" And he, you know, because he compared the Torah to Yehuda.
Give me this earlier.
Yeah. Oh my God, we are a mess. Not only do we have a Passover coming up, and we have no way to do it because we got religious shrines everywhere. I mean, we don't have a prayer up getting ready, and we don't even know who the Lowy are anymore. They don't know what to do. We've got to train them. We've got to get rid of all the religious gunk. Then we've got to, once we've got the people mentally prepared and the ministers ready to go and all of the religious crap out of here, and we've read the Torah so we understand what we're doing, and we've shared it with people, then let's go and let's celebrate Pesach, Matzah, and Makorim. And then he went to Yahweh and said, "Oh, my God, Yahweh, this is great stuff, but we're a real mess. Well, we really want to do this, but we're not going to get it done in time. Can we have an extension? Is it okay if we celebrate it, but just a couple of weeks late?" And Yahweh said, "Yeah, that's just fine."
And
so
then they wanted an extended.
And then they said,
"Yeah,
hey, you know, this was so much fun. Can we extend it?" And you know what I think that what that was saying is the relationship is reconciled. All is forgiven. You're on the right path now. The relationship is reconciled. I see that as a dress rehearsal of reconciliations. You know, of all the stories of the prophets and Psalms, that happens to be my favorite.
That's the closest you're going to see, and I've read that several times. How long ago was that written?
Oh, I would say that Hezekiah, I'm going to just ballpark it here, that Hezekiah was right around 700 BCE, 2,700 years ago.
Nearly 3,000 years ago. And even then, they couldn't even figure out who the Lowy were. Now, can you imagine people today saying, "Well, this is how they did it back then"? They don't know how anybody did anything back then.
Right.
That's what I know. That's why you have to look at Yahweh's words. Who cares what anybody did?
Right. Right. But, you know, if you are in Yisrael around the temple, you've got the Ark of the Covenant, you know, there are specific instructions that communicate important truths that Yahweh would not want corrupted. And so, you know, if you're there and you're in Yisrael at that point you ought to do it right. You ought to do it as close to right as you can. And, you know, that's what Hezekiah was trying to do. To my view, it is this a story of reconciliation. And you know what's interesting, of course, is that there was a selfish aspect to all this. Yahweh's children were about to be annihilated. The story of Hezekiah is that the northern kingdom had been obliterated by Assyria. There wasn't any part of the northern kingdom.
Yeah, and they were next
left
on the hit list in Assyria.
They were next on the hit list.
Yeah,
right.
The northern kingdom was gone.
There wasn't a single town, alliances
and everything else.
Right.
Yeah,
they were gone, and the southern kingdom, Yehuda, had gone back and forth trying to make alliances with Egypt, trying to fend off the Babylonians. The Babylonians finally said, "You know, you're repulsive. You're not trustworthy. You know, you're looking for help in all the wrong places, and you know." I'm going to teach you a lesson. And they were headed to Jerusalem, and Jerusalem had a 0% chance of withstanding that assault. And that's when Hezekiah stumbled on the Torah. And Hezekiah at that point had a choice. He could have said, "What we're going to do is we're going to build the mighty chariots. We're going to build mighty catapults. We're going to build mighty walls. We're going to establish a mighty military." He could have done that.
Until we're dead.
Or what we can do is get rid of all the religious crap, and we can collectively study the Torah, and we can forget about our defenses and say, you know,
I'm going to trust and rely on Yahweh.
Yeah, I'm going to try that instead. See how that
went. Was there 180,000 dead that night?
185,000. Yeah, 185,000. Yep. And you know what's nice about this story, too? Is here's the Babylonian king having crushed every foe that he encountered. The ultimate superpower of the world. And he sent 185,000 of his warriors to squish Jerusalem. And we have in Babylon unearthed tablets that say, yeah, I went there. I surrounded them like they were a bird in a cage.
But you know, and how fitting is it that it was Babylon, the symbol throughout Scripture of politics and religion?
Right.
They turned to Yahweh and defended themselves, and Yahweh defended them from the symbol of politics and religion.
Right.
How fitting is that?
Perfect.
That's the foreshadowing of Kippurim right there. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm convinced. You're right. That's a good pick. That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's where it is.
This also ties into is a person courageous that stands up, or are they? You know, it was Hezekiah at that moment being courageous, or was he just being trusting and reliant?
Well, he was being trusting and reliant. And sadly, what we're seeing in Israel today is the attack that was taken by Ephraim in the northern kingdom, and not the attack taken by
and it's going to fail.
Hezekiah.
And it's going to fail. It will continue to succeed at great cost until the end of this Syrian war, at which time there will be hundreds of millions of Muslims that come into Israel like a mighty flood. There won't be enough bullets and bombs to stop them. I do want to pause here, though, if I may, just as a bit of a distraction. It's a distraction that struck me as meaningful. We all know what Yeshaya 17 and 18 say. Yeshaya 17 is a depiction of what's occurring today, that the world's most the world's most important war prior to the tribulation is in Syria. And it depicts everything that is occurring in and around Damascus and what's going to occur in greater Syria. And so it's got the whole Islamic State thing is presented in spades in Yeshaya 17.
Yep.
And then 18 provides a warning to the United States, particularly to the United States militarily. What is the Obaminator asking Congress to give him this week?
I don't know. I have
a
not
declaration
kept up
of war against the Islamic State.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
Right.
Now, do you see the connection between 17 and 18?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. And it's the same president that is demanding that Israel give up the West Bank. The severing Israel at the waist.
You know, everybody knows that's a loser. Even Christians know that. I'm not going to say everybody, but the vast majority are aware.
Well, even those politicians and who are and statesmen and who are advocating it as a two-state solution. Every single one of them, every one of them knows, including the Muslims that they're negotiating with. Every single individual knows that the two-state solution and cutting Israel at the waist by giving the Muslims the West Bank is a guaranteed defeat for Israel, and that Israel will cease to exist within a matter of years of that occurring.
And, of course, that's not going to happen. It's not going to cease to exist. I guess
it is going to be severed.
For a while.
It will absolutely be severed, and it will be pummeled. It's just not going to be
two-thirds dead. This is not a pretty story.
No, it's pretty ugly.
You know, I see so many people. You know, I've got a lot of Jewish friends that, you know, they're not family.
Yeah.
You know, they're anti-Semitic, if you will. And, of course, they're pro the Jewish state, and they're very political and things like that, and all of them conservative in that realm. But what ends up happening with them is they get all excited. You know, Yahweh's not going to let us, well, G-D, Hashem is not going to let us down, and so forth. Well, you've let yourself down. He's already reported back what's going to happen, and it's real ugly, and I've presented it to them. And at the end of it, they go, well, yeah, it's not beautiful or anything, you know. But they all think that the IDF's going to save them or hope that.
Yahweh,
you know,
is not going to let the children of Israel all die because a significant percentage, it's a minority, but a significant percentage, perhaps as many as the one-third who survive, of Israelites are going to be reconciled unto Yahweh. Jerusalem itself is badly ravaged. There'll be great fires.
North End is right in the north end.
Jerusalem itself will be ravaged. And there'll be women that'll be raped and children that are taken into slavery. And it'll be very much like the Islamic State showing up one day at your doorstep. But if you are reconciled with Yahweh at the time that this occurs, you know, you've got the world's greatest life assurance policy.
Well, that's true, too. I'm just saying it's not pretty coming up to it. You know, all this hoorah, hooray, hooray, and let's go talk to Congress, and let's sit down and talk to Congress, and let's, you know, they talk with these political actors as though the United States were a friend of Israel. In fact, the United States is probably their biggest enemy.
Well, if you were to define an enemy as someone who is the primary benefactor of your foe, if those who want you and are committed, devoted, absolutely zealous about your utter and complete destruction because they think you have no right to exist, no right to even live, and the nation that supplies those countries with 90% of their weapons and 25 times more weapons than they allow you to purchase, and who is almost individually responsible for the economies of those nations so that they can purchase those weapons, and who is negotiating to sacrifice Israel for the on behalf of being able to buy oil and to sell weapons to those nations, that nation would be Israel's foremost
with friends
enemy.
Like that, who needs enemies?
Exactly.
That's a lot of ifs.
Yeah. Well,
wow.
And
wow.
As you know,
no, that's
there
quite
are no
a picture
ifs.
You just painted. I mean,
there, yeah,
I mean,
there
that's...
are no ifs because America is all of those things. We sell 25 times more weapons to the nations that are committed to Israel's destruction than we do to Israel. 25 times. 25 times. We're not talking about 25% more. We're talking about 25 times more.
Yeah, for this tank, we give them 25. Yeah, I get
right.
it.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow. And in addition to that, we are, if it wasn't for the United States, there wouldn't be a Saudi Arabia. There wouldn't be a Kuwait. There wouldn't be a Qatar. They wouldn't have any money to buy these weapons because we buy their gas and their oil. And then on top of that, we negotiate on their behalf, you know, against Israel with this stupid two-state solution. So, yeah, we are the foe, but we are... With the Abominator asking to declare war on the Islamic State, we are reading the transition between Yeshaya 17 and 18. Well, guys, I do want to apologize for my tardiness. I just got overwhelmed with the task and the complexity of it here today. And I did not think I was going to be a mover, nor did I think the move was going to take that long, nor did I think I was going to have to tell them how to fill the truck or the trailer. But
you would think they'd know that.
You would think they would know that. And you think they would bring the right size equipment, and they didn't. And so I did get caught up in it, and I want to apologize for being late. But
I was caught up in trying to get into the chat room, and it kept saying that this application is denied. And I was saying, what is going on? And then I kept hearing the music, and I looked. It was, you know, 7:45. And I said, whoa.
My computer crashed on me right before the show, so I had to do a reboot, get everything up and running. Nothing seemed to want to work out tonight.
Well,
we made it work.
The deal is.
Yeah, well,
that,
just make sure and tell me, how do I sign out here again? Isn't there a little thing up there somewhere? Because I don't want to be signed in.
Yeah. Well, you know, the fact is that we aren't professional. You know, we're not. All this is family getting together. And, you know, sometimes life gets in the way and, you know, we don't show up right at the time. And if it becomes a burden where, you know, you just have to do this and do that at this, then it's not family getting together.
It's no fun.
But it's no fun. So anyway, I apologize for being late.
Well, I mean, it's not like it was any kind of burden. It wasn't any kind of burden. I wasn't prepared. In fact, this week was the week I was not going to be here, and then Yalda moved her party to another person's house.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, as it turns out, guys, the thing that I heard Larry talking about when we got in happens to be my favorite subject. Yeah, it's just my favorite subject with Yahweh. We all have our different things. My favorite subject to think about in Yahweh is why is he so interested in us learning? Why did he provide the Torah to us in a way that requires us to dig and to think? You know, because it's not all spelled out for you. You've got to dig. You've got to think. You've got to make the connections. Why did he do that way? And what does he get out of spending time with us in eternity? And it just happens that my conclusion is what you guys were talking about when I connected.
Well, yeah, it was relationship. I mean, that's the ultimate. That's the wine of life.
Yeah.
We know
yeah.
that. You know.
Yeah. But this is a relationship that's not based on sacrifice. It's not based upon giving, and it's not based upon being lovey-dovey.
It's based upon reality. Which, you know,
this is a relationship that's more based on what it's like to be with a best friend, what it's like to be with an adult son or daughter that you really, really connect with, and that you have all sorts of things you like doing together. Like, I went about 3 or 4 years ago. I went on a week long digital photography trip through the Glacial National Park with my eldest son. And he got to be, I mean, he's
in Montana?
Is it Montana? Glacier National Park. It's the far north corner. It might be in Montana. Anyway, it's the Glacial National Park. It's kind of right there at the edge of, I think, Montana and Idaho, kind of where they come together. Yeah, I think it's right there.
I think
in the
it's
corner.
Near Missoula.
Yeah, it's really, really high north. It's right next to the Canadian border and the far western part of the state. And it happens to be my favorite national park. And we've been there a bunch of times. But this time, we did it to capture great images with a guy that led about 10 of us, all adults, through the park at the best times. You know, sometimes we get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to catch a sunrise. And sometimes we would catch the moon over a particular place. And it was exploring this magnificent wonder of nature and capturing it through this technology with an expert teacher and my son, where we had a common interest. Oh, man, was that.
By the way, that is in Montana. Yeah, it's in Montana,
yeah.
Right on the Canadian border.
Yeah, right on the Canadian border.
Straight up from there.
Gosh, it was it fun. And so I come to look at Camping Out with Yahweh. It's just like that experience with my son and I. That's what I think it's all about.
Sounds like a good example.
Yeah. It's definitely relational, and that was, I think, the tear that Yahusha was on. I know it's the tear Yah was on in his entire writings.
Yeah.
That look what you guys have done. You know, you could have came out way ahead. You could have had relationship. You could have been number one, and instead
yeah.
you chose the religious
yeah.
route.
Yeah.
You know, you decided
yeah.
to emulate all these people I had the land cleared of. That's
yeah.
what happened.
Right. It's a doing experience. It's a going out and exploring and having fun by doing. It's an this relationship is not just a sit around and say, oh gosh, you are so wonderful. I just love you.
That's phony anyway. It's phony
yeah.
anyway. Look, he tells us to stand up. He tells us to
yeah.
stand up. Oh, let me tell you, I might have a lot of fights or whatever, but at some point, I wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy it.
That's right.
You know, and I'm doing
it. I tell
you,
Dota enjoyed it. Dota enjoyed a good fight. You know, I think that Enoch and Hanak and Elia,
yeah.
I actually think that they're going to have a swell time during those 3.5 years.
I think it's absolutely true. I think they're having it out with the people. I know Elia was pretty
yeah.
sarcastic with them. He was
yeah.
laughing at them while he
yeah.
laid them to waste. And they
yeah.
all had it coming, too. Every
yeah.
one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't understand, you know, there's a lot of people that have this concept that we're going to go out there and we're going to baby people into the covenant. I don't believe that.
No.
Yeah. Oh, you don't like his words. Well, I don't
no.
care about your words. Don't let
you
the door hit you.
I'm interested in leaving people without excuse. I'm going to expose and condemn the religion. I don't give a crap what somebody thinks about me as a result of it. But I think that Yahweh wants people to be without excuse. So he wants us to expose and condemn the lies which lead people away from. So, you know, going through with Kirk, John 3, man, what a thrill. We were exposing and condemning systematically Christianity. And I don't know if Kirk is going to listen to the archives of this program, but, man, he is one smart
guy. What was it that Kirk did? Wasn't he involved in the Seventh-day Adventist movement or something like that?
Seventh-day Adventist was Don. I don't know what...
Don, that's
yeah, Don.
Yeah,
Don. Seventh-day Adventist. Yeah,
he was way
wig.
Up there with that.
Yeah,
yeah,
he was a big wig.
Yeah, and he said all that they ever studied was Revelation and Daniel. That
yeah.
That was about it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, Kirk's an artist, He has really gotten to be an expert in understanding Hebrew terminology by way of the pictures that create the words. But man, it was fun exposing and condemning Christianity using Yosha's testimony. I had fun at it. Yeah. I did. I had fun.
Nowhere did I see him say, go out and create a new religion based on the life and times of me.
I liked the fact that he said, Nicodemus, what's the matter with you? Are you out of your ever-loving mind? You claim to be a teacher, and you can't figure this out? You don't even know where to look? What's wrong with you asking
Fred,
me this question?
Fred had said, what was up with Nicodemus? And to me, this is my answer, Doug.
Yeah.
Nicodemus was as confused as people are today.
Yeah, absolutely.
They had walked away for so long. At that point, all he was hearing was religious tradition and religious copy edits.
Right.
And
even when Yahusha was telling him the truth, he couldn't process it.
None of this surprises me. None of it surprises me.
And here's Yahusha saying, what's wrong with you? And then he said to him, listen, if I talk about earthly things and you can't even understand this, how in the hell are you going to understand the spiritual? I just love his tone. I love his attitude. I love the approach. I love the whole thing to me was just absolute fun. And I don't have a lot of fun in the Greek text. I mean, I have a tough time with the Greek. But I was able to process what he was saying from a Hebrew mindset, from the Torah perspective. And, for me, it was total fun. I think Enoch and Eliyahu are going to have a great time. It's one of the few jobs that I would actually like. I would love that job, just because when somebody's being a nincompoop, you could just zap them and say, that's for you.
Yeah, well, the world's going to hate them, so you know it's going to be a good thing.
Oh, yeah,
that's
a good gig. You know, nobody wants to be hated unless you're hated for the right reason.
Yeah, well, you know. But the world happens to love a lot of idiots. You know,
Oprah Winfrey. The world's going to hate them. That puts them in a nice category. That means I'm probably going to like them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys. Well, it has been a very long day for Yada here. I am going to see if I can scrub up some dinner, and I'm probably going to have an adult beverage tonight.
You sound like you're falling asleep on your feet there.
Oh, I am so beat. And so I'm so glad.
I want to sign out, though. There's a little thing. Where is that thing at?
I don't know.
A sign out.
I don't know. But
in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the Yada Yada logo.
Yeah.
And when you hover over that, you'll see a log-out option.
Okay. And, guys, thank you for filling in. It was you're good guys. Happy to have you as brothers, and it's fun just to play off the conversation that you had led us to.
Okay, well, you have a good weekend, you guys. Really.
All right.
Enjoy
good night.
Enjoy your Shabbat.
I'll see you later.
Bye bye.